It's the second half of the season and we can't read the fixture list. It's today, Trippers. Today's show is brought to you later in the week, primarily because Phil and I can't decipher the fixtures and we thought this would be a Chelsea review. That, however, is next week and we've both signed up for a remedial course in calendar reading. This week, we plan to glance back at the latest Premier League win over Sunderland, preview the fixture against Aston Villa on Saturday, and spend a considerable amount of time engaging with the topics sent in by our listeners for Trippers Chats. I'm Trev Downey and joining me to tick all the above boxes are Dave Thomas, Paul Brennan, Stephen Daly and Phil Casey. Okay, let's start our general chat, an awful lot of which has been suggested by listeners who sent in tweets. And we're going to begin by looking back at the most recent game and putting it in perspective. So having defeated Sunderland at their place, Liverpool are now unbeaten in seven fixtures. One loss across 13 in all competitions, with a caveat that there's been too many draws. So Brendan Rodgers' oft-repeated mantra about how his sides tend to come good in the second half of the seasons seems to have some merit. Would you agree with that, Phil?
I don't know. It'll tell us at the end of the second half of this season.
Yeah.
I think it's something easy to throw out because we've had two good second half of the seasons. Swansea had a decent second half of the season in his last season there, and I think they had a decent run into the playoffs as well. So,
what about the run in the run I've mentioned there? The fact that we've only lost one in 13 or whatever.
The second half of the seasons tend to depend again on injuries as you go into the back end. If we lose Sturridge after a week or he gets injured again and he's gone for another 3 months, we're still going to be in the same shape as we are at this moment in time.
But he hasn't been there now and we seem to be building something. Is
that
fair?
Yeah, but we're still everyone was saying it on Saturday, if we play Sunderland this time last year or we play with Sturridge, we win that game 3 or 4 nil. We got 1-0. We could have easily, that Johnson shot could have easily gone in and it would have been another draw. You know what I mean? If you're not scoring freely against, I'll be honest with you, I thought Sunderland was possibly one of the worst teams we've played all season.
Terrible performance.
Absolutely awful. But anyway, you know, let's hope it is. I hate sort of people relying on, oh, we're always better in the second half.
Oh, that's nonsense, clearly.
You know what I mean?
Paul, is that fair that there does seem to be some momentum building in terms of results, getting a few points on the board, making progress in the Cups, that might back up that idea? Or is it just coincidental?
No, yeah, I think performances. I think obviously since we changed the formation, like I think attacking wise we've looked a lot better. And I think defensively we were okay against Sunderland. And momentum wise we have picked. We haven't had a run like this basically all season. Only one loss in 13.
Yeah.
So I do think that Rodgers does have a point with his teams finishing better. And he says that he said last season that he sets his teams up condition-wise, like the conditioning that they do in pre-season, that it is geared towards having a better second half of the season. So hopefully it does come true again. I think it could, especially with the players we have coming back soon.
Okay, well, I suppose
like Glenson.
Yeah, exactly. Glenn Johnson, put him in there. Lovren, he's got a few minutes under his belt. Throw him back in as well.
He's ready to come back in.
For fuck's
looking
sake.
Forward to it.
Brendan has name checked. Glenn Johnson is one of the ones he's looking forward to coming back. But anyway.
Did you see that article with Lovren's Kinder Surprise?
Lovren's Splendid. Kinder Surprise.
Yeah, he has a collection of Kinder Surprise toys. not that this is a surprise at all, really, but like he does have
is
a
this
big
a joke.
No, this is not.
It was in the Echo as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He has hundreds of them, and you've got to think about who's in charge of his PR. Someone sat down and said,
This guy
has such a great relationship with the fans. They're just going to love this cookie sign.
Surely that's too much chocolate for a professional athlete to eat as well.
It probably explains the mad fucking running after Rushes. Every single ball. Hey! Sugar balls!
Cracking open, there's a toy inside. Jesus.
Maybe that's what he's been doing, was, you know, people were whipping crosses into the box.
He's
there trying to put a head on a tiny Mr. Potato head, man.
no.
Did they any chance? Oh, sorry, lads. Just got a new toy.
I can't slide on my right side. That's where my Kinder is.
Yeah, he's like your man from Cool Runnings. Lucky egg.
Right, now, that was disturbing. Steve-O, talking about something that apparently Dejan is supposed to contribute to, which is the defence. One characteristic that's been constant of Rodgers' tenure has been changes in style and formation. And now we've seen this back three emerge with Emre Can on one side, Mamadou Sakho on the other side. Either side of new contract by Martin Skrtel.
Big Marto.
Is our defence approaching levels of acceptability?
Acceptability, possibly. I suppose they have looked reasonable in the last few games with those three there, but actually Touré was in for some of them as well, wasn't he? But I suppose... I don't know. I'm so dejected when it comes to our defence this season. Mm. But I shouldn't be, because we always concede goals. I'm dejected this season with our defence because we don't have the goals going in up the other end, which, two things. One, which masks the goals we're conceding. And two, if you're not scoring your chances, it's giving the opposition impetus to come down and attack you.
Well, talk to me about those three in particular.
I'm delighted to see Can actually getting some game time. And Sakho.
Okay.
We've called for Sakho all season long. We thought there was an issue there from a personality point of view or a relationship point of view between him and Rodgers. Don't know whether there is or there isn't, but he's getting game time now, which has been enforced through injuries. You know, as we've all probably agreed at some point or another, our best form came last season because of enforced injuries. And thanks to Phil's voodoo dolls.
Andy's injury machine.
Well, Andy's injury machine has worked a treat in the last few weeks. It has to be said. I'm delighted to see Sakho getting some game time. Mm. And I'm delighted to see Can getting some game time. It's not where I'd like to see him playing. But, you know, he needs minutes under the belt. We spoke about how he looked rusty when he was on and maybe carrying a few pounds extra. So if he's getting games, then that's, we can't have... Well, it's beneficial, yeah. And he looks comfortable enough there. So,
Dave, would you concur? Is this what we want to see? These three people in particular, are they the best that we have in this system?
Well, if you're playing three at the back, probably. Although, I mean, look, I think if we were all picking everyone's fit, who would you play? You'd probably play Touré ahead of... Skrtel.
Yeah.
I think most people would. I think Emre Can, or the idea of playing the right side of that three as a bit of a ball player, I think has been something. To be fair to Rodgers, he could have just gone with a more flat back three. I think that is something that he has innovated, and we should give him credit for things that he does do rather than things that are kind of forced upon him. I think that the real surprise for me, and I say it as a surprise because I've never really been as mad about him as everyone has been Sakho for me. I think that he's actually really grown in stature over the last few games. His passing's very good. I think that we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago, that if you look at the mistakes Moreno has made all during his time playing with Liverpool, it's always come when he's played with Lovren on that left-hand side. And suddenly you put Sakho next to him and he looks a different player. Mm-hmm. We're not conceding ground on that left-hand side anymore. And I think that, you know, Sakho, Moreno, Jean and Markovic, you know, those two combinations should be what should be now our first choice defence or midfield, whichever you want to look at it. And then Skrtel, look, Rodgers loves Skrtel. And, you know, I actually think he's looked pretty good in the last few games playing where he's played, because for two reasons. One, he is less inclined to grapple with someone because he tends to be the free centre-half, so he's not giving away stupid free kicks. And because he's kind of the sweeper, if you like, he's not having to be proactive and make stupid tackles on the edge of the box like him and Lucas and like we saw from Lovren when Lovren came on. So I actually think the three of them are working really well. But Jean and Sakho have elevated that unit into a really strong unit. And I think that the other thing I would say is, Chelsea and Southampton aside, nobody can defend. Like, you know, Spurs have conceded more goals than we've conceded at this point now. You know, so, you know, some of our rivals, if you look at Everton, I think Everton have conceded more goals than we've conceded. So you know, outside of two really good defensive units, the standard of defending in the league is really poor. And we're just
that's the story of the season, though, isn't it? And it's no consolation, really, that we're as bad as everybody else.
No, being bad as everyone else, particularly when we haven't. I mean, you know, I saw on Twitter the boxing analogy, you know, we've got a glass jaw and no knockout punch. You know, so we concede really easily.
Killer
we
combo, can't score. Yeah.
You know, that's an Amir Khan, you know, combination. Yeah. I think someone described it.
Phil, did you want to talk about this, or can we move on to the little bit in front of that now with our first contribution from one of our listeners? Did you want to talk about the defence?
The only thing, the one bit that's impressed me about the back three is the way Chan has played as a centre back. So the lads are touching. You know, he steps in. I suppose when you're playing that way and you want ball playing centre backs, both himself and Saka have been very good at stepping into midfield and carrying the ball in. So they become effectively in possession and an auxiliary midfielder. And if you look at like even the chance that's created for Borini against Sunderland, you know, Chan picks it up at the edge of the 18-yard box, strides into midfield, looks up, picks a pass and plays it perfectly. If we go back to the previous game and it was Sacco's pass that set up the I think it was the Moreno goal or the initial the Moreno goal in the other game. And if you have the other two in there, you know what I mean? Like if you put Lovren back in, you don't get that. You know what I mean? We were sold him as this ball playing centre back, but when you actually see ball playing centre backs, the difference between them, that they're able to pick a pass, that it's not just a 50-yard attempted crossfield ball all the time. They know when to, you know, use the ball, recycling, and it's not just aimless recycling across the back three. You know, if they go to the other side, it's because they feel that Chan or Saka will step in and create something and get us turned and get us going again. And I suppose, you know, I know we'll get onto it later, but, you know, it's helped out because they become auxiliary midfielders in effect. So even if it breaks down quickly in the centre midfield, they're already pushed high to step in and be able to press the ball. And overall, it aids our pressing game because we're able to move up the pitch more. We aren't as spaced out.
It saves your midfield having to drop back and come onto the lip of the centre half as well, which is happening even with Lucas or Gerrard, whoever. Yeah. When Touré and say if Touré skirtle Lovren there, one of those is having to come back and
take
that ball.
Take the ball because you're not going
to. I think we have to be fair though. Like as good as Chan has been in certain aspects, he has been roasted a fair few times. He has been caught out of position and being skinned on.
But he's a 20-year-old midfielder.
Absolutely,
playing centre-back,
absolutely, so. And that's what I'm saying. So, but we can't. It can't all be, you know, happiness and sunshine. There is flaws
God
there
forbid.
that better. Well, there's better teams would expose that. You know what I mean? He makes the mistakes that he's made against worse teams, and you'll be punished.
Well,
with
there is something in that we haven't. I mean, across this 13-game run, we've played two effective attacking units, Arsenal and United, and they put five goals past us. So there is an argument that actually we should be unbeaten in seven and we should be one defeat in 13 given our fixture list. What I would say, I think every centre half gets burnt though, right? I
mean, at some stage in a game,
if you watch him closely,
he just seems to be eager to come in to the. He seems to be a little bit tactically, not sorry, I won't say tactically naive because that's one thing he's not. He seems to maybe be a little bit too eager.
Yeah,
a little bit too eager to come and attack that ball rather than maybe giving that attacker half a yard to take.
But I actually think that's an instruction thing because
Skirtle's behind him.
And if you go back to when Lovren comes on, Lovren attempts to play like that.
Yeah,
but gets done, and he attempts
to play in many ways.
what Chan is very smart when he's doing that is that he doesn't commit himself into a sliding tackle or something.
No, he doesn't
like
commit himself to be booked. He gives himself the chance to recover.
I will give him that.
And you see him turn, and he is chasing. You know that player straight away.
Or if he's turned, Skirtle seems to have the awareness to come out.
Yeah.
And then he's going into filling.
If
in,
it's
in
an
the
instruction
center.
Thing, then he can't be blamed for it. That's what he's being asked to do. By
one of the positives as well is that like he played better, I thought, against Sunderland than he probably did in the previous two games. Yeah. Where, especially against Wimbledon, a lot came down him and Manquillo's flank. Manquillo usually is one of our most solid players, but I thought a lot came down their flank, and I was kind of wondering, like, is Chan kind of slipping here? You know, he is young.
Yeah.
He's playing in a position he's not used to. Is he gonna suffer some like confidence wise? But I thought he looked better, a lot better against Sunderland.
You know, sometimes you see a player and they have a game and you go, oh, this game is either gonna. It's either going to knock him or he's going to come back from this. And I was impressed that he came back from it because I think he could have, after the Wimbledon game, I think he could have gone for five games.
I actually thought with the Wimbledon game, I thought he had a poor first half. I thought he improved massively in the second half, because it was like what you said. He sort of said, oh, shit, I was going in way too much. I was overcommitting myself.
Remember, his position changed as well in the second half.
Let's be honest as well. Aston Villa did him a lot of favours. Or sorry, Sunderland did him a lot of favours.
By never pressing, ever.
Yeah. well, one way or the other, whatever we do defensively, we're going to have to worry about putting some goals away, as you boys have all flagged up earlier on. And one of the things that I wanted to look at next was basically the shape of the team ahead of that back three, assuming that that stays in situ. And we had a suggestion in from Simon Brundish as to what do we think is our best formation once we have all our players back. How do we see the shape of the team in front of that three, and assuming that that three remains? And what's the best way for that to work?
I think that's a very interesting question, because going back to what we've just been talking about, we're saying we're automatically assuming it's a back three.
Yeah, well, that's, in fairness, that's my assumption. Yeah. I realise I'm doing that as an editorial thing.
I don't know if it's a back three. I don't know if that's as... I think that's something that we've done to get, obviously, the perceived best positions for our best players on it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So, I just don't know. I don't know. I think if we have everyone fit, I think you're potentially looking at a diamond again. Going back to, you know, to what we were best at last season, if you want to talk about recapturing that type of form as a real attacking force, it's potentially a diamond.
That's a real worry in terms of who's going to make up the back four then.
This is hypothetical in terms of who we see as our best formation with all our players back.
Yeah. Right?
So for me, the back four would be Manquillo. Skirtle is the likely one to play, so we'll accept that he's there.
Right? And Sacco.
Sacco. And Moreno, and then I'd have Chan as the bottom of the diamond, with Allen and Henderson flanking on either side, and then I'd have at the top you'd have
Coutinho,
and then I'd actually play Gerrard and Sturridge at the very top of it.
Yeah, see, I disagree slightly in that I actually think this formation suits the most of our players. So I think this formation actually works. If we were going to a four, I would in the medium term, I think it's really difficult to go and buy a really good centre half. So I would develop Emre Can for the next 2 years to play centre half, and I'd play him next to Sacco. So in the meantime, I'd play him in that three. I'd continue to play him there, and then I think the two in the midfield, because you've got that three, we always get killed in midfield. So as long as you're not playing Gerrard and Lucas, I mean, any other combination of midfield in there, as long, with some version of legs, either Henderson or Allen's legs, I think that works.
To go to Simon's question, who is your two? Who would you go
for? Well, for me, I'd play Allen and Henderson.
Yeah.
Would be my two.
Yeah.
If you're playing Chan as a centre-back.
If you're playing Chan. So I'm assuming those three at the back. I would play Markovic as the right wing-back. Moreno as the left wing-back. I'd play Henderson and Allen in the middle, and then I think you've got options then at the front, and you know, Coutinho, Sterling and Sturridge is probably what you'd end up with. So Gerrard doesn't get in my team, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I suppose the only thing is, right, and I'm sort of trying to I'm trying to fit players in who I think that would start regardless of what happens.
No, I know what you're doing,
so it's like, you know, no matter what we say, Gerrard wouldn't be my preferred 11.
You know
what I mean? But he will be in the 11 that plays. So how do you build a team shape that's going to get the best out of him? And I think the Sunderland game, of all the things, showed once you don't have him in our own half, he's best positioned in the opposition's half. Yeah. And if you let him float the way he did against Sunderland, he was causing a lot more damage just floating and not having a defensive responsibility than if you have it. And again, I still think outside of Sturridge, he's the best finisher we have in the club.
Mm.
So keep him up there. You know, if you can get him into space and get him on the end of chances, he'll score goals. The Wimbledon game is a great example. He's in there and he's winning the header. That's where you would have expected Lambert, who was signed as a goal scorer, to be getting on the end of it. He wasn't even making the same movements. And this is a guy who's truly an attacking midfielder, and he's not a centre midfielder or a defensive midfielder in his nature.
I think what's interesting is, for all the clamour to play a front two or whatever, nobody's going to put Lambert or Balotelli in the starting 11. Mm. Like, they just don't fit the way, whether we play the diamond or whether we play the 3-4-3 or the 4-3-3 or whatever we end up playing. I just don't see Lambert or Balotelli fitting into that system. And I think, but when Balotelli came on against Sunderland, he did two things, right? He allowed the defence to drop, their defence dropped even more because they got a little more nervous about him. But apart from that, you know, he wasn't particularly effective. And we, you know, so for me, you know, Sturridge, Sterling, Coutinho, the front three, any combination of Henderson, Allen, Gerrard, Lucas, but not let Gerrard and Lucas together.
Once we don't go to the 4-2-3-1 exactly. And play Sturridge as a lone striker, it didn't work against Southampton. There's this idea that if Sturridge comes back, you play Coutinho, Sterling and Markovic, let's say, behind him, and you put Gerrard back in the centre midfield, or you play Gerrard in that tree behind him or whatever.
Yeah.
That will not work. It didn't work against Southampton, right? It's really only worked, or sort of worked, when Suarez was there, because Suarez isn't a natural number nine in terms, he was dropping in.
Why won't it work?
I don't think we have the players that suit that side. I simply don't.
The midfield isn't good enough.
Mm-hmm. You can play a two in that if you're playing Henderson and Chan, but I don't think the three narrow suit the players that we have. I think Sterling is better if he's really far up the pitch, either pressing teams back or playing off the shoulder storage, or sort of in two as a central forward. I think Coutinho likes to float. So if you pin him to, say, playing the left-hand side or playing on the right-hand side or playing through the centre, you lose what's effective there. And again, I don't think Markovic... That doesn't suit Markovic, in my opinion, anyway. I think Markovic is better suited... I think what Markovic has benefited in playing the wing-back role is that he's been able to come onto things.
Exactly.
So he's seen the pitch in front, he's been able to come onto.
Because he actually doesn't yet, because he's still building his game, he doesn't dribble past players. He doesn't get to the end of the 18-yard box and look to beat the man. He doesn't do that a lot. He's still quite cautious, I think, in the final third. But what he's great at is carrying it, is moving us up the pitch. You know, he's great at moving us through the middle third. Fuck off. He's good. Moving us through the middle third. Again, you know, what he's not great at is you wouldn't necessarily want him at the end of the 18-yard box and thinking he's going to beat the man and shoot, because he's still a little cautious for that. So I completely agree. That's why he's got to play right wing back for me. That's his best position, coming on to something.
Well, look, that works good well as a segue into the next piece that I want to look on. Paul, I'll start with you in this. The lads have flagged up both Markovic and Coutinho under comments there, and one of the most encouraging aspects of the recent form has been the form of the two boys. How instrumental do you think they've been, and will they be in any hopes that we have of any success this season, whether it's a cup win or an outside chance at top four? Talk to me about as well how, when Raheem Sterling was out, you know, those two guys, young guys, did step up a bit.
Yeah, I think Markovic, his form has been, it's been a lovely surprise, because the way he did struggle at first, I don't think anyone was expecting him to come back into the team and immediately hit the ground running. So it is great that he's played that way, especially in a new position that we've asked him to play.
Yeah.
He's looked a lot more confident, and like Dave said, he does get us up the pitch. You give him the ball, and if there's like 50 yards of space in front of him, he'll just eat it up. He'll just run with the ball, and suddenly, like, we're at the other end of the pitch. He's gotten us up the pitch.
But to be clear,
he definitely had a lot of moral commitment in character.
Getting us up the pitch there.
I think like the real reason, one of the real reasons the 3-4-3 has worked has been the fact that it's freed Coutinho. So much of our play is just giving it into his feet, and he turns people in midfield. He turns them on the halfway line. Doesn't really matter where he is. He just glides past people, and suddenly their defence is backing off, and we're running at them. So I think like he has been inconsistent on the whole, Coutinho, for Liverpool, and we've kind of said, like, you know, he has a great game. You're kind of thinking if he could do that every week, and I think this has looked like the closest he has.
Yeah,
this is as close.
If he wasn't
to
the worst finisher at the club, he'd genuinely be a tremendous player.
Yeah,
that's a fact.
Coutinho.
Yeah, if he just, I've never seen
a man pass a ball to the keeper as many times in my life.
Or that drag shot to
the
left. If he just pretended the goal, there was another goal.
You know that scene in Forrest Gump where the whole stage tells him to stop running. No! I feel like all of the cops should, when he goes to shoot, go, no! No!
Or if, you know, pass to the right of the goal, everyone held up, like,
shoot here! The arrows to move around. The arrows to show them where the goal was.
But the worst thing is, he beats two players, and I feel like it would almost be easier for him to dribble through the whole defence and goalkeeper and then to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, just go around the keeper every time.
Yeah, you're good at that bit. Yeah.
You can do that bit. Don't shoot.
Don't shoot the ball. Run over the line.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But like, to be fair, Steve, to watch him these days, like, it's a real treat. Like, taking on players, confident. You're confident he's going to go past him, and then there's a pass.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is that because we have a willing runner in behind the lines?
But there's hardly any doubt about it.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you look at it, the forward line was so static earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. He's not. And two things happen. The centre forwards don't make that run, therefore occupying the centre halves, giving him more space to do his thing in. That's his 15 or 20 yards where he really operates. I know he can come in off the left, come in off the right, ghost past people in his own half, doesn't matter. Where he really operates, where he really excites us as a player, is that 30 yard to 15 yard from goal area. But
where it's really busy.
Absolutely.
It's not like he's isolating one player.
No.
Goes into the little narrowest area and he comes out with the ball.
He looks like somebody's controlling him on FIFA. Somebody who's good at FIFA.
Enrique. Enrique
is controlling him. Until he gets to the 18 yard box and he
depresses
the pass.
Not true ball. Bollocks.
That's why it's Enrique controlling him.
But that's that's definitely been a part of it, you know. And that, you know, he's a confidence player. You can always see that about him. If he feels that people are making the runs for him, and he gets those few little, you know, sort of, he goes past a player or two, his head is up. He's looking for it. He wants that ball.
I think there's two other things as well. One is the change of system has helped him because the wing backs occupy the defensive midfielders. Yeah. So the full backs and the defensive midfielders have to leave more space in midfield for Coutinho to come and get it. The second thing is the move of Gerrard out of the defensive midfield role. Mm. Because nobody's giving the ball to Gerrard now. You give the ball to Coutinho. Coutinho's now the out ball.
He's the playmaker. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas when Gerrard was in the defensive midfield player, that's the ball that everyone was looking to give them.
Yeah, and he was more than 5-6 times a season looking for that 70-yard pass rather than giving the ball into somewhere that... this strange things are happening here. Rather than giving the ball to an easy pass.
And I think Gerrard, when he's, you know, playing in the opposition half, it's less. I think the rest of the team feels under less pressure of him demanding the ball.
Yeah, nice.
Because it's a tougher pass. You go, well, actually, I'm going to give it to Coutinho because, you know, he can run. So I'm going to give it to him and he'll beat a couple of players.
Yeah. Phil, talk to me a little bit about our holiday boy, Raheem Sterling, who's been missing.
Well, should we ask Phil about Markovic? I think we should get Phil's,
I've been long a supporter of Lazar Markovic. I thought when we signed him, we were signing an absolute gem of a player.
From day one.
Can you stop
this?
I've always backed
Can you stop gritting your teeth? The listeners can't understand you.
I can't believe how people doubted him. Imagine some people even said he was like a Stuart Downing. I just don't know where they were getting that from.
Yeah. I can't believe that some people, Phil, some people, and I can't remember who said this, said that we should give Lazar Markovic, as in give him on a permanent transfer to Derby, to incentivise them to give George Knibe back to us.
Man, Damo, when we get Damo in here, we're going to take him apart over that.
Humble pie, I think you described on Twitter, right?
Look, Markovic has been, but I've already said it, because... And credit to Rodgers for doing it, like, and he deserves credit for it by not putting him giving him a run in the wing back position. And you've got to say fair play to the player because the player could have just shrunk and not stood up, but he did. And as you said, by giving him the chance to come on to things and be able to see what's in front of him and go and attack spaces where he feels he can, he's been definitely served. And you can see he's a player with confidence. The attempted volley.
Oh,
that was fucking supreme. That was absolutely supreme.
It was an absolute. But he meant that. Like,
when you see it behind,
he's doing that on purpose. Yeah. He's shaping his body up to be able to.
He's the only player, apart from Sturridge in our squad, he's the only player who would attempt something like that. Suarez would have attempted something like that when he was here. Mm. But that's what we. Look, we've got to be careful not to big him up too much, but we have missed that. Someone
cue
who's
the post
like,
Villa pod.
Shit.
I always said he was another Stuart Downing.
He was just like Stuart.
But we should. I mean, I think on Markovic, it'll be next season before we see anything near.
See,
his
this,
best.
But this is the thing. I, you know, You hope he would, right? But he's also got the novelty factor of the first season. Often players look better in the first season and struggle a wee bit in the second as teams become more familiar with what their skill set is, and they have to then go and sort of readjust themselves to how defence they're playing at them, and then they come on. Sort of like Coutinho had a great impact initially,
struggled a bit in
the first half of last season, then improved massively in the second half of the season. Now we've put him back in the position that he's best in, and Coutinho looks great again. You know, up until this, he was there going, and unless you're playing him as one of the midfielders in a diamond, or you're playing him as the way he is now, which is effectively a free roll. He's
not a number 10, Coutinho. No. And we got to stop trying to fit him into this 4-2-3-1 and saying you play in the number 10, because he's not that player.
All right, Thomas, you've derailed my agenda fella, which are blatant.
What were you saying about
Casey there? Here, what I was asking you about was Sterling. Sterling's
going
to return to the team. I'm talking to you, Egypt.
Why are you looking at that?
Because he has a gun arriving. You leave him alone. He's not wearing his eye straighteners.
Turn the glass he was watching.
Trev's latest regeneration is a bit blind.
One's looking at you, one eye's looking at you, the other one's looking for you.
Yeah. I'm crying on the inside now. You shower of shit.
We wouldn't know because it's that far back. It's coming out your ears.
Anyway, Raheem Sterling. He's going to step in, you'd imagine, instead of Barini, who was tremendous at the weekend. That's just for you, Dave. Phil, one question in from Anton. Raheem, is he better as a 10 or a 9, or where do you think Raheem's best place is looking?
9.5.
To the forward. Well, explain that role to me then.
No,
false 9.5.
I think if you're playing with three up front, be it a 4-3-3 or a 3-4-3, whatever way, if you're going to play with the three up front, just allowing him and Coutinho to have those free wandering roles, that's where he's best served. He can play as the central point in that attack, but it's not, when you play him there, he's not really a central point in the attack, because you'll see him drift out wide, and then one of the other two that's around him will go inside. So even if say Gerrard is fit to play this weekend, if you're starting Gerrard, you have Sterling and you have Coutinho, right? You've got three. Once Gerrard isn't trying to come back and cover in midfield as well, he'll be as equally happy moving into the central point and having Sterling and Coutinho drift out wide, and they will cause the most damage that way, because you have our three most effective attacking thrusts in the final third of the pitch where they need to be, and looking for spaces and finding spaces where they can penetrate the other team's defence. So when you ask, I think you know, he's shown that he's capable at playing the 10 as well, but it's been so long since we played him in the 10 that you can only start to go on recent form, and I think he's best at playing as one of these free Roman attackers that we have,
despite a very, very disciplined job that he's done for the team, and a mature job as well.
I think it's excellent that you can ask him to play three or four roles, and at that age can actually, you're not worried, oh shit, we're shoehorning him in here, we're shoehorning him in there. Whether you're playing him at the top of a diamond, whether you're playing him in the 10, you're playing him in the 9, you know, a wide forward, doesn't matter.
To be fair, with Markovic and Chan, he's therefore becoming one of those Brendan archetypal multifunctional players.
You know, and
that's what he's always said he wants to build his team around. Should we talk about Daniel Sturridge? I'm afraid to talk about Daniel Sturridge.
Like I was just about to ask, is it the weekend after next that he's back?
I don't think he'll be in the squad this week.
There was a lot of talk on Twitter that he's not going to.
If he's in the squad this weekend, I think it's merely just to get him back integrated with the lads, build up his, you know, just give him a pep in the step.
He hasn't trained at all in terms of actually taking part in the team training, so I don't think he's going to make the squad.
I read somewhere
that he's going to miss both Chelsea games.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, so I don't mind, because if we're going back to the idea of Sturridge, like, do you know what I mean? Looking at the teams in front of us, and this is to completely disrespect the teams that are in front of us, right? With the exception of the Chelsea semi-finals, you should be able to go into the Villa match without Sturridge and be confident in the way that we've created chances with the players around that you can continue to do this. You know what I mean?
It's probably why you want Gerrard back in the side for this game, in the sense of just a natural finisher. You know what I mean? If you're going to play Coutinho, like I would prefer to see Gerrard, Coutinho and Sterling as the top three than Lambert or Balotelli at this moment in time.
Yeah.
You know,
I actually didn't think Balotelli was as bad as people were making out when he came on. I thought he put himself in
the
at the same time, people were going over the top, like, I thought Barini was very poor, but what Barini showed was that once you have somebody that's prepared to move
to drag a defence around the place,
that one, you need movement in that front three.
Balotelli's dropping back to our halfway line. Hashtag movement. You know what I mean? Like, at one point I saw Balotelli further back than Lucas, and I just went, what the fuck is going on?
But I know he's trying to get involved, and I'm not
slating him. I actually still, I only said to Andy the other day, I think he might still have 7 or 8 goals in really? Him between now and the end of the season
really?
When Sturridge comes back. Yeah. I think, and I can only go on that Spurs match, and it's probably blind optimism, as I often mock other people around here with that, such things. it might be blind optimism, but yeah. I think Balotelli could actually have a part to play in our push for top four this season.
Brilliant.
See, I don't. I think he'll.
It's great that that's recorded.
I think he's been terrible.
He has.
I don't see where he fits in. I was excited when we signed him. I thought he's big, he's powerful. I thought if he applies himself, and that's the bit, he's shown no evidence that he
wants it.
Yeah. None at all.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And he is not a good enough player to build the team around. People are saying, we haven't played him in the right system, we haven't played him
if
in the right...
If we resign Origi, he won't get a game between now and the end
he'll
of the season.
He'll be gone in January, I think.
Okay, right, look, speaking of, we're dancing
then
around...
Then that would fuck up my prediction if he was gone in January. It's unlikely he's going to score 7 or 8 between now and the end of January.
That's the best reason I can think of. I hope he goes.
And if he scores...
Make shit of my prediction.
If he scores 7 or 8 goals by the end of January,
he won't be going
anywhere.
we're dancing around the topic that we're going to come to next, which is the transfer window, which is not even looming. We're in it.
Steve-O's doing a cha-cha.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Look, you read the papers, you go online, we're linked with these massively expensive Higuain types, a lot of uninspiring types, and there's a lot of talk about people going out on loan and stuff like that. But it's seeming more and more real that there's going to be bugger all transfer activity around the Liverpool way. So we've a lot of questions coming in from people and suggestions coming in from people. So I want to talk about them kind of sequentially. We start with a simple one. We have both Ryan and Phil, Ryan Berger and Phil Scrine from Twitter, both talking about Asaidi. And Ryan actually says, somebody has given Liverpool money for Asaidi. In fact, we've made a profit, I believe.
Yep.
Can anyone explain this?
Yep. That is the epitome of a money ball signing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and it happens at different levels. If you sign someone for 50 million and you sell them on at a profit, that's exactly what you're meant to do because they've developed so well. Suarez was another example.
We bought
him for 23 million and we sold him on for 65. You know what I mean? So, you know, you're looking.
How much did SED go for?
He went 4.75.
Right, so we've made 2 million quid on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but so like, I think he's worth 4.5 million all day long. To be honest, that's what when we were talking earlier on in the season about what we thought. I thought we'd get between 4 and 5 for him if you were to sell.
But it's good to see it happen because so often
great,
it doesn't.
Great, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But I thought he was a great player. Well, not a great player. But he was a good player for Stoke last season.
Yeah,
and he deserved.
He got one in the match for them
against
game.
United.
Yeah,
he scored the winner.
I mean, it's an even better deal because transfer fees depreciate over time. So actually, we bought him 3 seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
Three for 2 million or whatever it was. He actually probably was on our books for nothing.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, in terms of the way FFP and all that stuff, the write down, it's actually a 4.75 profit.
At least not a kid either.
Well, so. it'd be the 2 point whatever broken down by whatever amount of years his contract is.
But that's all very exciting, lads. But hang on, Stoke, we're going to give us 6 million. 6 million.
I know.
Yes. What happened?
He wouldn't go. Like Barini.
They couldn't agree.
Are we too nice to players?
He should call a few more players out there.
Yeah.
But as deals go, we got money from.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
You know what I mean?
He was never getting... Listen, he clearly wasn't wanted by Rodgers. And I think he deserved a chance ahead of Victor Moses. I don't know why we signed Moses on loan and sent him out, to be perfectly honest with you. I think he would have actually been a more direct and better option, or as good. But we've made 2.5
He might have scored against Crystal Palace.
I actually think we're pretty good at selling players, actually, on the whole. Like, you know, I think if you look at the...
are the only Liverpool fan alive who thinks we're good at selling players.
We were great at selling Aquilani.
Like... No,
we've had two players who we've really not wanted to sell but had to, in Torres and Suarez. That even rhymes. And then you've got like who else would you say?
Who have we sold?
But they
can't
have anyone else.
No, but that's not it. The way it works.
I get your point in terms when it came to cleaning out the Kenny era.
Yeah.
We did well there. Like,
we're very good.
Before that, we had a decade.
What you're saying is we're very good at selling players for half the price we paid. I'd be a fucking great car salesman if I started selling Ferraris for 50 grand rather than the list price of 100,000. Anybody want a Ferrari half price?
Would you have paid 17 million for Andy Carroll?
Absolutely not. But then again,
so
I would
a 2 million loan fee.
I wouldn't have been the dickhead that paid 35 million for him in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, let's.
Well, he was free.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah, he was free. He was free because we sold Torres.
Because we did such a good job selling Torres.
We got for -15 million actually.
So all in all, we made a 22 million
profit.
Like,
we got 6 million for John Joe Shelby.
That was decent actually.
Oh, we got 1.5. We paid 1.5 million. So we've really
just
6 million.
We've just been poor with selling the players that we signed under the committee.
We couldn't. Well, who have we sold that we bought under the committee?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who have we loaned?
Well, we've loaned them all out.
Yeah. Nearly everyone. We signed 8 players.
I think the committee's been loaned out at this stage.
You know, it deliberately follows on from that. Yes, okay, maybe we are showing some sort of skill when it goes to selling players. But are we ever bringing in players of at least an equivalent, or more to the point, imagine, better standard than the ones who go out? No, we are not. With the exception of the Torres Suarez sort of movement. That's it. Can you think?
We brought Moreno in for Enrique.
And the truth is,
we didn't, though.
Because Enrique's still there, stinking the fucking gap.
But you're saying who we brought in that's better than the ones that are there?
Well, Sacco's better than Aga, right?
But he was still there as well.
Yeah, no, Saka was brought in a year before Agger went. You can't say that was a like.
That's
for
what I'm talking about.
So we brought in Ricky Lambert for Suarez.
Yeah.
Let that go through your head.
That's not fair. Time's going to tell him for Suarez.
Time's going to tell on that one.
We brought Balotelli in for Lambert.
I personally think the club are poor at shifting players they don't want. For whatever reason that is, I think the two big players that they lost, they didn't want to lose them. They had to sell them, but they weren't out touting them around.
Yeah.
And therefore, the players that they have wanted to shift, they don't seem to be capable of it. That comes down to your managing director or your chief executive to get that done.
Another one that's come in, it's slightly advancing the topic that we're on here. We're reading these things, whether they're fictional or not, about some of the big name players. There was a whole Shaqiri thing, and now there's Higuain and all the rest of it. People are reading this. An awful lot of people are believing this stuff. Will there come a time, asks Alex, when Liverpool...
Who's believing the Higuain story?
Clearly people are. When people will...
Send their names into Triple Chance. We're not signing Higuain for fuck's sake.
You're getting dangerously close to your Christmas mood there, relax.
Angry Dave on Dave.
Yeah, which was edited out for your protection. Will there come a time, says Alex, when Liverpool will buy established stars, or should we now get used to signing potential? Is that the new way, is the question from Alex. That's a valid one.
But it's not a new way. We've never signed established stars. Who was the last established star we signed?
John Barnes.
So we never signed established stars.
I know, we signed established players in the 90s.
Am I joking? Yeah, but like it's a long time back. Who? You have to go back.
Paul Stewart.
He's an established star.
He was an established star at the time.
Paul Stewart is the equivalent of a signing of Lallana, which you've made that point a million times. Right? So if that's an established star, as in a top player in the Premier League, then we've
I mean, you can't say Lallana was an established
Nigel
star.
Nigel Clough.
One decent season in the Premiership.
Nigel Clough is, Stan Collymore is, then Lallana is.
Stan Collymore.
Stan Collymore had one good season with Forest before we signed him. That's not an established star. That's not buying like an established star is going out and spunking money on
Fernando Torres
wasn't a goal machine before we signed him. He was a 1-3, 1-2. Fernando Morientes was coming to the twilight of his career.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't.
Was he 29, 30?
He played in the Champions League final and was the top scorer in his
league. Morientes is probably the closest that we've had. But my point is, though, during the time we're talking about, we must have signed 100 players.
Yeah. Robbie Keane.
One of which is an established guy. Okay. Three
established players in a decade, probably.
So we don't sign established players. So anyone expecting us to go out and sign Tevez or sign Higuain?
Well, we should be.
No, we shouldn't be.
Okay.
We should be signing.
Kieran Palmer is asking a question that everybody is asking. It's my safe word, yeah. Why the hell do we not have a new keeper? Why is there not a new goalkeeper in the club now, given what's happened in the last couple of months? That's a very good question, Kieran asks.
The lads were off.
Well, our transfer.
They were checking out hotels for Sterling. It's part of their remit.
Because, to be fair to our transfer committee, right, they have had
this can't end well,
21 of the last 24 months off. So it's been a busy period for them. Okay. So I do. The reason we're not signing a goalkeeper is why we're not signing anyone right now, which is I imagine FSG and I don't blame them, are a little bit unwilling to pump more money in what seems to be a bit of a dysfunctional transfer process. So I would say that they're looking at the outlay from the summer. I think there would be an acknowledgement that there are some promising signings that we've made, but I think where the difficulties happen or where the disasters have happened is where there seems to have been a lack of agreement within the committee or some sort of compromise. And I don't blame them for not willing to put another 20 million into that system. So I think anything we do in January, which I don't think we'll do anything we'll do in January will be short-term, low-risk. So I think if someone, and I know he's just gone to Leicester, but it wouldn't surprise me to see us sign someone like Mark Schwarzer or someone like that as a goalkeeper to come in.
I think there's a good chance that Ryan might come back on loan.
Casper Schmeichel.
No, Peter. Sorry. I think Peter Schmeichel's more likely than Casper Schmeichel.
So I think the reason we're not signing a goalkeeper, we should be, I think Phil summed it up nicely when we were talking to him before Christmas about it being negligent if we didn't have a goalkeeper signed, you know, kind of on the 1st of January.
And lo and behold.
But I think everyone can see that. So the reason it's not happening is because I think the club or the owners are a little unsure as to how we proceed with the football management structure.
Is it possibly a sell before you buy situation? So they haven't shifted anybody yet and therefore can't bring anybody
possibly,
in?
Possibly, but I think anything we do is going to be short term.
Look, I think we'll only sign a keeper on loan until the end of the season.
Yeah.
And we're probably leaving until, they could well be leaving until the last minute to see who's the best potential loan goalkeeper signing they could
Julio
make.
Cesar.
Oh, God.
Cesar's no four choice of Benfica.
Is he gone?
Yeah. So you're probably looking at, I suppose everyone keeps saying check. Maybe we can afford, if Chelsea.
Why would after letting Schwarzer go, they're not letting.
I agree with you.
They'd have to buy a goalkeeper in January to be letting check.
You'd be looking at what top teams around Europe have two top keepers and one
Barcelona might let
to yeah, that might be the thing, that might be that possibly. But then Barcelona can't bring players in.
No.
So are you looking at Madrid and maybe Keylor Navas?
Maybe.
You know, you're sort of down to where we are.
Well, I think the leaks today out of the club were that we wouldn't sign a goalkeeper. That it's unlikely.
It's madness, though, isn't it?
Rodgers just said after the game at the weekend, he expects, you know, possibly nothing happening.
But this is why it's... Well, he actually said we need a goalkeeper. He, in his press conference, outdid the committee.
I didn't
see
the press conference.
We need to sign a goalkeeper. And today now the leaks are that... Well, I don't know if they're leaks, I'm perhaps being unfair, but you know, the stories are that we're very unlikely to sign a goalkeeper.
Tonight's half 10 news outbreak is that Liverpool have just signed a goalkeeper.
I think you mean outbeak.
Outbeak, I think it's
if Mignolet is so bad now that Brad Jones took up, before Jones got injured, Brad Jones took over as the number one.
Brad's really fit, so, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, it's a crisis averted. No, it's definitely a case of that transfer committee, right, there. You know, the end of the transfer window, they're put into cryostasis, right? the thawing process is still happening. They only start thawing them out on the first, like, you know, or the third, was it, when the transfer window
opened.
So they're not even fully thawed.
it'll be 27th before they've got full mobility back. They've got 2 days to play Championship Manager to figure out how to
play. If we don't sign anyone this month, right, we would have signed 9 players in 24 months, right? And 30% of those players were from the same football club.
It's handy for scouting.
No, that's 24 months.
Go to a match.
We took 9 players last summer.
Yeah.
We never sent anyone in January. We won't send anyone in this January. So that's a 2-year period, right?
That's,
where we've signed 9 players.
It's a 1-year period.
2 years.
1 year. From last January to this January.
No. But if we go to the summer, it means we won't send anyone up until the summer, right?
Yeah.
So it's a 2-year period.
Okay.
Yeah.
But would the didn't summer.
How many days are in a week?
So we go to the start of the summer, which is June.
The edgy.
This is, we go to June the 1st, yeah?
Yeah, this is on the 1st.
June 2nd, January 2013.
Weeks would go from Sunday to Sunday.
7 players that summer as well.
June the 2nd, January 2013. What are you asking me here now?
I'm saying June 2nd.
We're going down a wormhole.
No, just June the 2nd. June 2nd, 2013 is the start of your 24 month period. If June the 1st, 2015 is
so
the
what
end
I'm
of
saying
it.
Is summer,
so we signed 15 or 16 players in that
so
time.
Summer 2000,
I'm basically saying you're talking bollocks.
Okay, so summer 2013 we signed players, right?
Yeah.
Summer 2014 we signed players. What I'm saying, from the end of the summer 2013 until the start of this summer,
isn't that 24
we've only
months?
Signed in one window,
so 21 months. Okay.
And those my feet.
Do another one. This is from John and Phil again. Both guys are mentioning Skrull's new contract and how much we might love or hate said move. Steve-O, you've had a lot to say to Dave there. Talk to me about...
Most of which will probably be cut, so we won't know what we're talking about. But,
talk to me about Scott's contract. Is it a good thing? Is it? Was it?
Listen,
it's
fine.
Just
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I'm nothing it, yeah. Basically, because, yeah. You know what I mean? I don't... What's the point in letting it run down? And if we are going to get rid of him in the summer, having to sell him for fucking $4 million, you know, he's... not the worst defender. Like, we've got Lovren there, who's a worse defender than him this season, so you know what I mean. I'm gonna pay $20 million for him, so I'm just
Skrull's got that in the plus column.
Yeah, basically, like, I
want a new contract.
Why not?
What do you want? What do you want?
Why not?
Hello, I have a Kinder Egg here. What do you want?
Well, how long was left on his contract? I don't know.
18 months still.
So you get to the summer, it's 12 months, you're selling them for $5 million. If he has a decent 6 months, and even if we want to shift him in the summer, having given him a new contract, you're probably putting an extra $5 million.
But he could sell him in June, in which case, you know, that's only 14 months.
Absolutely.
I'm with Steve. I don't understand the people getting annoyed about the skirt contract thing. It just makes no sense to let it run down. Why? Yeah.
Why are we not giving this fella away for free?
Yeah.
Because we want to try and make some money off of him.
You can still sell him in the summer. You don't have to tie him. He's like a brick you tie around your ankle when you're jumping into a fucking canal. You don't have to do it. Just sell him in the summer.
People want to make a sacrifice of Skrtel. They're like, just kill him. Yeah. Just
put him on an altar and slit bleed him.
The thing about Skrtel is... Right.
They want halal Skrtel.
Skrtel will be brilliant next season.
Yeah.
So he's having a bad one at the moment.
Well, he had a good season in 2012, and we're still waiting for the next one.
No, but you know, it's not so much if Skrtel is part of four centre backs, right? And he isn't being christened as the best centre back in the club.
That's fine.
Nobody's going to get annoyed with that. Mm. It's the fact that he's the immovable object in that defence.
If Skrtel's coming into that defence in the way that Kolo Touré has this season, nobody cares.
Yeah. Oh, if you he know, had a better goalkeeper and a better midfield, who knows? Like, do you know what I mean?
He'll still struggle to deal with it if we revert away from the three this weekend and he plays against Benteke and he decides to mark him instead of Sakho, which could happen because we're fucking nuts, let's be honest. We're in trouble.
Sakho's not even playing. Lovren's back.
It's one of two things, right? Either Rodgers is staying, as in he's going to be the manager next year, in which case Rodgers likes him and we have to live with that, so therefore it makes sense to give him a new contract. Mm-hmm. Or we're not sure if Rodgers is going to be there, in which case we don't want to let it, you know, potentially someone we could get some money for, let the value run down, in which case it makes sense to give him a new contract.
But if you're potentially losing Kolo Touré in the summer, let's just say about it, right? You've lost a centre back already.
Yeah. Mm.
So if Skrtel then goes into summer, you've lost two centre backs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lovren and Sakho are your only recognised centre backs that are there.
And
right?
Sakho might be off.
Who knows? But what all I'm saying is that, like, then, so you're saying that Lovren is nailed on, has replaced Skrtel, essentially what it is. So, who would you prefer to see in the team? I know it's like.
The only fucking argument I've heard here is, well, he's not Lovren. what do you think, Phil? Do you think it's good? Well, he's not Lovren. and you, Steve? Well, he's not Lovren.
I think we're probably, you know, he's become an easy. You know, target Lovren has because he's been so poor the first half of the season.
Yeah, with good reason.
You can only, yeah, absolutely with good reason. Yeah. But, you know, in the same way we slated Markovic or whatever else, you can only hope as a fan that Lovren improves the second half of the season and gets back to, I'm not talking about being, you know, an absolute world beater, but gets back to a reasonable level. He's going to play because I don't see Emre Can staying in that position for the second half.
I also see
Sakho
picking up an injury. If you go, you know,
in the same way, Sturridge,
he picks up injuries.
Yeah.
So Lovren's going to play at some point.
Yeah.
So you want him to come in at least fine form. Like, it's very harsh to criticise him again for the Sunderland game. He comes on, he hasn't played in God knows how many games at that point in time, and he comes straight back in. And he actually didn't do too bad.
You also don't want to give yourself too much to do in the summer either, right? Because if Touré does go, and let's say Lovren doesn't recover, and, you know, there's a come to Jesus moment where you're like, okay, this isn't going to work out. You don't have to go and buy three centre halves. Yeah. Like, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So keep a skirt on. Okay, he seems to be the shit that won't flush, but, like, you know, it makes sense to at least have him on the books with an option.
Well, and another thing in the Skrtel in his plus column is he's not the only shit we can't flush. So.
Well, maybe you just insist that the headband must be worn.
Yeah, it makes it
better. Because Skirtle is better with the headband than he is without the hair.
He's got Terry Butcher's.
Yep. Yeah. So somebody has to keep punching him in the head and try and
get that.
I'd probably give Colo Torre another 1 year deal before I'd give Martin Skirtle a 3 year one.
I will.
I probably would.
Yeah.
Is it a 3 year extension or just up to 2018?
Who knows?
It's another 14 months on the 18 months after 14 months.
So that's a 2 year period.
Yeah. Technically,
he's actually in the second trimester of his contract.
Okay, right, we better look forward to the matches to come now. Look, we're not going to do the usual structure preview because, frankly, we can't be arsed. And this was supposed to be a review pod. I don't know if anybody.
The review of the Chelsea
game.
I was one of those tits as well.
I kind of really want to do a review of the Chelsea game that we thought was on.
Three all draw wasn't a bad result.
We did okay.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
Shame about the death of Lovren, though. Rest in peace, Dejan. It's going to be buried with his Kindle collection. It's going to take the entire squad to carry the coffin.
Skirtle's only plus is gone now. Skirtle's back to fighting for his future.
They're going to basically wallpaper the coffin with the foil wrappers of the Kinder egg
to keep him warm.
All the toys laid out on the top.
He is one big Kinder surprise.
That's how he arrived for his medical. That's why Zaf had to go.
He just got a hammer and cracked the egg and he popped out. Surprise!
Somebody actually had to turn the thing to get it open. Every opening bastard things. The arms won't stretch around. Get Sacco in.
No.
I can't get any purchase.
I'm Fabergé egg me bollocks.
Look at the giant big plastic egg.
Well, poor Dejan, he's dead.
What are we doing again?
Dejan's
dead. I texted Phil yesterday saying, listen, what's the story? I'm going to miss this Chelsea match tonight. And he goes, don't worry, you're as big an idiot as me and Trev, because we both thought it was on as well. I was like, yes.
Yeah, that's why we're doing it on fucking Wednesday.
Yeah,
like it's those months again.
Gather a bed. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Anyway, look, let's look forward to the games that are coming up. I suppose we should do that. Which is the more significant match in your opinion? You know, our League Cup win under Kenny turned out to be quite an underwhelming thing. An awful lot of people, well, there's a lot of split about how important it was. We're in a semi-final. Some people say trophies are everything. Some people say the league is everything. Some people say the league, the top four, is gone. Which is the more significant match for you guys?
Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Well, look, because the Premiership has been relatively poor outside of the top two, and even the top two haven't been, you know, being glorious in a relentless march towards a title for one of them, right? There's still a chance. And as long as there's a chance, we have to prioritise the league.
Okay.
With a decent weekend results-wise as well. Like where we won at Sunderland, United lost, no, Spurs. I think Spurs lost
tough fixtures
as well.
Again this weekend, isn't it?
What we don't want to do is go to Sunderland, win, get back, sort of, you know, feel that we're back in with a chance, and then go and fuck it up against Aston Villa.
Look, the fact that it is, though, he's on a high into nothing either way, right? Because if we beat Villa and lose to Chelsea, people are going to criticise him, and if he loses to Villa and beats Chelsea, people are going to so it's the run of fixtures that, you know, he can't, unless we win them all, you know, people are going to be dejected. But because if you go to the cup, to be fair, it is a chance for trophy, and it kind of history's kind of been rewritten a little bit. Kenny didn't get sacked because the League Cup wasn't important. They sacked him because he wasn't the guy they wanted, and they weren't going to let the fact that he won the League Cup.
But do you buy into this? You know, Liverpool are that exist to win trophies, and does the League Cup
it hasn't got any appeal? The significance.
Yeah,
but I think there's an argument, and to be fair, it's an argument that Mourinho has put forward, which is, you know, you win. You know, winning becomes a habit. You win the first trophy you can win, you win it, and then you know. And actually, it reminds me a little bit of the conversation that's been had slightly differently around Lucas, which is, you know, experience. And these young players having an experience of winning is, you know, it's an important thing, I think, for them to start having that. You know, so imagine that Jean and Markovic and Marino and these guys, they win something in their first season. That's got to be a good thing. That gets him into that habit of winning. And I think that's why the League Cup is important. But, you know, we've got to win at Villa first. That's the big thing.
So you're in the same boat as himself. It's
I don't see.
We
I don't really
have to prioritize.
I don't
league.
Particularly want to rank him. I mean, I think we're going to put the same team out for both games. Yeah. Really. Yeah. I mean, he's going to play the same 11. Because we know Rodgers is going to do that.
I suppose what I'm asking you is, do you agree? Do you think there's still an outside chance? Like you're
you keep asking this.
Mr. Positive.
Top four.
Yeah.
No.
They keep asking for a reason.
I do.
It's a relevant question.
Absolutely a chance.
Yeah, definitely.
We're 5 points off.
Here's why I don't think we'll get it.
Because first of all,
you said no. Thank you. Okay.
So the second half,
his short term memory's been affected, and his short term memory's been affected.
So do you think there's a chance?
Yeah, I do.
That's my short term memory's been affected. Does anybody know if my short term memory's been affected?
But it's outbeak.
But I don't think we have to have a bet the second half of the season. Then. Three of, you know, Manchester United, Arsenal, Tottenham, and Southampton. Okay, and if we throw West Ham in, that's four out of those guys. And we already have to have a pretty perfect second half of the season. We're talking about winning maybe 14 games out of the next. And I just don't see it happen. So I don't think we're going
to... Trev, do you think we have a chance again?
My short-term memory's been
what do you feel? Like, I think we do, Trev. And I absolutely would.
No, I don't think there's...
I'm an optimistic guy, but I just think we've given ourselves way too much to do.
When it comes to football, I would be as well.
But I just think that it's quite plausible that we can have a second half of the season in the way Southampton did. United could truck along as they have been all season. I know there's the thing of Van Gaal's teams, you know, get stronger in the second half of the season, so do Rodgers' sides. Yep. You know what I mean? So, you know, as do Wenger's. So then it's just a case of, right, can we... We need to beat all of those. We beat United, we beat Spurs, we beat Arsenal second half of the season. All of a sudden, we're within a point or 2 points of those teams.
Going back to the two games,
That's minuscule. Like, nothing.
Given that the Chelsea match is a two-legged affair, so it's not just a one-match knockout, essentially. There could be a level of tactical play involved in terms of how you approach the actual game itself. Do you need to win the first leg? Yeah. What do you need to do to keep it alive going
into
the second
first,
leg?
Right?
Yeah.
We ain't getting jack shit Stamford Bridge, mate.
No, but we do. But in fairness, our record in cup games in Stamford Bridge hasn't been too bad over the most recent history as well. And you wouldn't know how Chelsea are going to approach the match, because how close is the Champions League for the second leg?
That's a good point.
I think Mourinho has Rodgers beat all ends up, though.
Psychologically, he's beat all ends up.
You know, if you approach that game and you're not playing, like, I hear what you're saying, it's going to be the same level, you know, Saturday and Tuesday in terms of what's there. There is capability to shuffle it around a bit going into the actual Chelsea game. You know, you look at the match against Villa, the way things have been going, he's been playing with one really attacking wing back and one more defensive. So even though Moreno is more attacking than Mankio, let's say, right? Yeah. He's been sort of saying, right, I use the two, because he didn't sort of rate the Sunderland team that was up against him. If you could do the same against Villa, but you would look for more defensive stability going into the Chelsea match.
I think the challenge with the Chelsea match is it's likely that Alan, Gerrard, Sturridge are all going to be out, right? And when you're talking about, and Lallana, sorry. So when you're talking about who could rotate in, you know, once you take those four players out, who's next then? Who's going to go into centre midfield to replace Lucas without bringing Jean in there, in which case who plays in defence?
But I think that happens. I think there will be a bit of that. I think Jean will play in the centre midfield in the Chelsea match because he played so well against Chelsea. Do you remember in the home match in the actual league match? And he'll bring Lovren into the team and get 90 minutes for Lovren in that game.
That's okay though.
And if Johnson is fit, which they're saying he almost is fit, he'll come back in for the Chelsea game as well and play on.
Well, Johnson might come in and replace.
Guaranteed to take Hazard out of the game.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sorry, no. In no way going to take Hazard out.
But no,
Trev looks like he just got a text to say someone in his family died. He's sitting there going, oh my God. Oh my God.
The text says, don't forget you've got problems with the short term memory.
And it was to himself.
He doesn't know who sent it though.
It's the Irish version of Memento.
He's there going, who's me?
Here's a question for you. If you were offered 9 points in the next three league matches, but to be beaten 3-0, 4-0 in each of the cup games, would you take it right now?
Yeah. I would. I definitely would.
Because I don't think we're going to get top four, so I take the trophy.
Stop being so negative. You're always so negative.
I think you take nine from nine, and absolutely three of those five teams have dropped points.
No. I know. That's why it's a different opinion. But I wouldn't. That's why you asked. I would, but it's not because I believe
we're going to do pull up any trees in the league. I think it's because we need a bit of consistency in that competition, and to be honest, the other two cup competitions are far more important, the Europa and the FA Cup.
The only thing is
for me, coming up to these two matches, I think if you lose the cup game against Chelsea, you can kind of say they're the best team in the country, it's a cup game, we've still got the second leg to go. But I think if we lose against Villa, or even if you draw against them, it feels like you've pissed everything from the last couple of weeks up the wall.
So that's why I'd take 3 points against Villa.
If you win the next three league matches, right, you only have to win 10 to the end of the season to get the 14 wins that we talked about.
Hmm.
It was 10 out of 15.
But it's still, you're starting
two-thirds.
You're starting to narrow what you had to do in comparison to what it was.
Yeah. It's very hypothetical that we're going to win the three games. So I'm just saying, for me personally, the League Cup, if we miss out on Champions League and win the League Cup at the end of the season, I in no way will feel good about that. It in no way will help us attract players in the season, and we'll get £1.5 million for it rather than the 100 million quid that
and
comes
from qualifying. And the reason I do it, just to elaborate this, I part of me thinks that we're not going to make the top four anyway, and I think regardless of what we do next season, there cannot be a downside from these players winning a trophy in terms of their mentality.
I understand
in terms
that.
Of, so for me, longer term, I think...
creating a habit of winning.
Because I don't think we're going to make top four, I think that creating a habit of winning with these young players, creating that unit, making them experience that, you know, feeling of winning and, you know, of beating good teams, I think that's more important for me right now than consistency in the league. But I do understand the argument that, you know, if that 9 out of 9 would put us on a nice platform, we would have won 5 and drawn 1 out of 6 in the league. So that's a good run to go on. So I totally understand that.
Well, irrespective of 3 games and 3 wins and all the rest of it, Paul, I'm going to come to you on this in a second. I don't know about the rest of you, but I cannot countenance losing to Aston Villa. I just can't.
Nah,
so yeah. I'm curious to know what you think we look like for that match in particular. And we'll just, we've kind of touched on it already, but just get a quick idea from everybody what we think. So, Paul, would you get
what
us started?
What I think we'll look like. Yeah. I think the back three will stay the same. That'll be Sacco, Skrtel and Chan. Midfield, I think he's going to go for Gerrard and Henderson, I think, and put Mankeo right wing back and Moreno left wing back, and I think he'll shift Markovic forward with Sterling and Coutinho.
So you think Lucas steps out this one?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, Phil?
Sterling's back, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think the only change was Sterling come in for Barini.
For Barini.
He might switch around the wing backs.
Well, Gerrard's not fit.
Is he not?
No.
Gerrard's well, then Sterling comes back in, and then you're. I think he might
bring Sterling in for Gerrard and leave Barini up front.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's going to be that massive changes. And then I think Markovic might switch over to the left wing back if he's going to bring Mankeo in. Say he fears Bowden-Lahore's pace down the left hand side, then he might bring Mankeo in because he's a more solid defensive option down that side.
See, Phil, you say that, but on the last time of asking, when there was one simple change to be made, he ended up having to make 3 because of the personality he chose to
play. Yeah, but I think there's difference. I think he's poor in game. We've talked about him being poor in game, but I think when setting up the team, I think it won't actually be that many changes as opposed to who's injured, who's not injured. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So I think Sterling comes in, Barini for Gerrard, Barini probably stays where he is, and then you're looking at either does he switch Markovic over to one, swap him around and bring Mankeo in, or does he leave the same 2 fullbacks? It depends on, again, it goes back to how close Johnson is, let's say, to being fit if he's planning on using Johnson in the Chelsea game, whether we like that or not. But you know what I mean, that's what I think he's looking at.
He could bring either Lovren or Johnson into the midfield, push Jan into midfield and play Henderson as one of the two
wing backs.
No, as one of the attacking midfield players behind Sterling. So you drop Barini, Henderson plays where Gerrard played. He could do something like that. Or even play Jan there.
Yeah, which he's done it. So there's a lot of ways he'd switch it around, but I don't think he'll make major surgery in terms of personnel and positions given the injuries that we have as well. So.
Okay. Well, look, there's no point in beating that particular horse to death. So let's go and get a couple of predictions. And bear in mind, we're talking about a team here who have lost to Leicester. Drawn with Palace and Sunderland and lost to Swansea in their last 4. Surely this is going to be a win. I'm putting words in your mouth, Paul. Can you
say replicated all of those results this season? I'm pretty sure, actually.
Sounds oddly familiar. So, Paul, prediction for the Villa game?
1-1. Because they always just jack up their performance level when it comes to us. I think they have our number, basically. They just have a load of big running bastards that we don't like. Big and strong lads. And, like, they're a horrible team. Like, they're, like, terrible, but we just don't like playing them, and we're not going to beat them. We're going to draw with them.
Okay, 1-1 says Paul. Steve-O?
2-1 win.
2-1 win for Liverpool. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Excellent, Dave.
Yeah, I'm with Paul. The thing that makes me a little bit nervous is apparently Lambert's on the brink, and whenever Lambert's on the brink, they tend to turn in a performance. And
Ricky or Paul?
No, Lambert's on the drink. So whenever Paul Lambert's on the brink, they tend in
tend to turn in a good performance, yeah, and he gets a new contract, and then they're crap again for like 4 months. So I'm a little nervous about them. I think they're just one of those sides that we just can't deal with, you know? Can't deal with Benteke. Vla always has like the game of his life when he's playing against us. Their midfield runs
he's out though, thank God. Nothing that matters. They're still going to draw
us. And that was the same in Anfield as well.
Yeah, well, actually, Vla was out and they played Nathan Baker and he had the game of his life. So I'm a little nervous around it. I got a funny feeling we're going to fall a bit flat.
And?
We'll draw 1-1.
We'll draw 1-1, Phil.
Assuming that he goes with the same, more or less like for like in terms of the team that we did against Sunderland, I think we win. I think we win.
I think if Sterling had been 2-1. In that team against Sunderland, we'd have scored more goals. Mm. Not necessarily just him, but I think his pace and his direct, you know, approach in terms of running at opponents.
The thing with Villa though is they run at you and they press you, and we struggle when a team does that to us. And
we have done this season. Yeah,
we've talked about it all season, right? If a team sits off on us, we look great because we can pass it all around.
But again, going back to we're talking about the shape and the whole lot, and with Gerrard out of the team as well, I think we've got a much, in terms of the way we press and the way we play, is much faster without him.
So again,
if you bring Sterling back in, even with Borini up top, as we're talking, because he moves around and allows for the other two to rotate around wherever they want. No, I know, David, but it's the same as the Lucas. We didn't get into the sale of Lucas, right? People are cribbing, oh, we can't afford to sell Lucas, we can't afford to sell Lucas. You can if you have a competent, a better defensive midfielder who's naturally a defensive midfielder or that type of midfielder that sits in there. That's purely the facts around it. You don't build him up to something that he isn't. Yes, he's had a good run of form, but all he's doing is simply doing what a tactically aware midfielder will do. You know what I mean?
I think Lucas is the easiest person in our midfield to upgrade.
Yeah, Alex Song will do that job for you all day long.
I also think that anyone who played under Rafa Benitez, we should have a policy that anyone who played under Benitez shouldn't play for us anymore. And I'm saying that not because I think they're bad players, but because they've been through so much shit at this club. Yeah. They must all have post-traumatic stress syndrome.
So hang on, wait,
how
where,
many games?
What about Skrill? You wanted him to get a new
bed? Stop bringing Skrill.
He's not into Kinder Eggs.
And Lovren's only just died. Can we have a moment?
Imagine Lovren looking at Skrill's head and just seeing Kinder Eggs.
To be fair, I think all of us at one time or another have thought, I'd love to peel his head open and wonder what's inside. So
he's just smashing it. That's why he's turning off. He's just looking at Skrill's head going, oh, imagine, my God, imagine the toy that's inside there.
Imagine George Sefton before the match. Number 3, Emre Can. Yay! Number 37, not Lovren.
That's his new name. Brilliant. Before we have our next pod, they're going to have a replay of the game that was on last night, which is the home leg of the
3-all draw
Carling Cup semi-final. Yeah. So can I get a prediction for the replay of the first leg, the home leg? What do you think, Paul? Result, Chelsea.
One all again.
Brilliant. Steve, how do you see that one going?
2-0 Chelsea.
2-0 Chelsea. Dave?
I find that I have no idea. Honestly, I have no idea. I fought a Paul all night, so I'll say 1-1 again.
Okay, brilliant. And Phil?
2-1 win.
2-1 win for Liverpool. Yep. Brilliant. Lovely. Okay, first one is from Stephen. Stephen wonders, how come Tarzan is always clean shaven? He hangs around with hairy animals. He wouldn't have the tools to shave. Why is Tarzan clean shaven?
Because he has alopecia, you fucking insensitive bastard. That's a wig he wears. So?
A lovely answer there from Paul Tarzan Brennan.
Obviously a family relative.
Obviously, yeah.
Very close to
his uncle Tarzan there. Okay, here's one from Nick. This is one of those horrific choices. Would you rather always have a blister on both feet or every time you use a zip, it breaks?
Every time I zip, it breaks. It's a ridiculous question.
Why?
Just buy a button jacket. Button jeans. Just don't buy one with a fucking zip.
Cheat. You're not allowed to cheat.
I'm not cheating. I'm just not going around with two fucking blisters on my feet.
How do you do a button suitcase?
Very easy.
Button suitcase.
That's actually a good shape.
Right,
next one is from Sean. Sean wonders, if you had 3 months to live and you had £5 million, what do you do? 3 months to live, £5 million.
by Dejan Lovren's Kinder
and break every single one of them.
Before Ian Eyre can give him a new contract, I'd buy out the rest of Skirtles and tell him to fuck off.
You're going to play for Paul FC. Same Paulie. Yes, yeah, same Paulie.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Steve, are you shouting that now? Yes?
Probably, if a serious answer, probably bring my friends and family away on fucking nice holidays and just enjoy.
Oh, fucking idiots. It's all serious. It's all serious now, is it?
Yeah. Coke and strippers.
Phil, have you guys said? No. 5 million.
You're going to space. You're going to space.
Yeah, yeah.
Going
yeah.
to space.
He fucking lives in space as it is.
Go into space.
Try and find a wormhole.
Cryogenically frozen. Why? The transfer committee. They have to come with me.
Actually, cryogenically freeze them, send them to space, and float them off.
Actually, I'd use my 5 million to do that to Phil as well.
If we all come together. Yeah.
you want to go to space to be cryogenically frozen, not like on Earth.
I'm sure it's a more difficult process.
Chance if you open the window when you're up there, you will end up cryogenically frozen.
Okay, another one here. This is from Hot Misunderstood 2015. He asks, in honour of ex-Liverpool legend Roy Hodgson.
How did he get so many characters into his name?
I don't know. We could turn this into a new discussion. Anyway,
Paul will be DMing you later on.
Pick a World 11 to play for a draw.
Your keeper has to be the best keeper out there in order to stop.
Right, yeah.
So Manuel Neuer.
Who's
let's
your
say.
Back four?
Robert Huth, Mark Wilson.
To play for a draw.
Ryan Shawcross.
You'd want to knock.
I see where you're going with this.
So a World 11. I see where you're going with it, but I'm pretty sure they're going to concede some goals.
Len Whelan. How do I know so many Stoke players?
It's scary. And who's up front in a team that you want to draw?
Well, you don't want them to score, and you go, so Ricky fucking Lambert anyway. And Mario Balotelli, as it turns out.
And Mourinho as a front three.
We're going to play the front three up front of Liverpool at the moment.
You could play Barini up front, and the other team would not even need a defence. Definitely not score any
Barini,
goals.
Barini, Lambert, and Balotelli up top. Clean out for no goals there, no problem.
Last one then, team of the year. David Luiz is in team of the year. Talk to me about that.
But like the team of the year is rubbish.
Yeah.
Because if you constructed an actual football team and your midfield then is all just attacking midfielders, the team that's constructed properly will win.
Yeah.
The team that's built for a draw on accident.
They'll nick it on a set piece.
The team that's built for a draw in the dressing rooms.
No!
They even won that fucking match!
Hodgson comes in. Who are you all fucking playing? The way they pick that team, it's like a countdown, you know, like, yeah. Oh, Carol, I'll have Messi, Ronaldo, and any other old shite.
Two from the top and any of the rest.
But they never even turned up, Thiago Silva and David Luiz, so that'll tell you they were even shocked. They never even went to the...
They're going, what? Where are the team here? Who's the goalkeeper?
You're waiting for Ashton Kutcher to jump out and tell them they've been pumped.
Finally, some admin. We'll start with a weekly shout for our kind host, Astro Park. Book your pitch time at astropark.ie. Your day trippers tonight were Paul Brennan, Dave Thomas, Steve O'Daly, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
Yeah, I was in Waterford Hospital on Monday and they had a vomiting bag and everywhere there was like these big yellow posters that was said outbreak, you know?
Yeah.
They spelled outbreak wrong. It said outbeak. It's like, is that a new department? Is that like, you know, if you've got an
absolute arsehole.
Outbeak shit.
So what floor is the outbreak? It's a lot of advertising.
A bit of an old schnoz on me.
A lot of advertising. I can't find it anywhere.
Not be a panic. It's only an outbeak.
It's not a full blown
really
outbreak.
I don't see what the fuss is about. Yeah, yeah.
It's a level below an outbreak. It's an outbreak.
Yeah.
But you know, the funny thing was, because... you know, people were there and everyone just kept going, well, I spelled that wrong, rather than it should say outbreak. Something serious happened. Oh, look at the twats.
Anyway,
get that paper out away.
I could be sick.
They contract an outbeat.
Oh, I think I'm having an outie. It's probably best to go on your own. I don't want to give it to everybody else. I don't want
to. You were in the hospital. You saw it's going around.
Saw it. Everyone has got the outbeak.
Imagine just come down there that morning with a pelican thing. I think I've contracted an outbeak.
You remember his signs, love? You remember them?
I believe it's happened to me. Why always?